from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, we talk with author and San Francisco Chronicle columnist Vanessa Hua, whose debut collection of short stories titled Deceit and Other Possibilities includes a movie star in Hong Kong who flees home to Oakland after a sex scandal and a woman who fakes her acceptance to Stanford. Then at 10:30, it's just me against the world. The late rapper Tupac Shakur will be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame next month. We look at the life and legacy of Tupac, who lived in Oakland and inspired countless artists before his death in 1996 at age 25. That's all next on Forum. Join us after this news. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Award-winning Bay Area journalist and writer Vanessa Hua has a new short story collection that explores the lives of people struggling to be true to themselves amid contradictory social expectations or the pressures of tradition. Titled Deceit and Other Possibilities, it includes the story of a woman who manages to fake her acceptance to Stanford, a Mexican-American family in San Francisco's Mission District that's falling apart, and a Hong Kong movie star fleeing a sex scandal. Hua joins us to talk about what inspired her collection of stories that Oprah magazine called a searing debut. Welcome to Forum, Vanessa Hua.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
And congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
So you've joked that your stories are about model minorities behaving badly. What do you mean by that?
I think often stories about immigrants and the children of immigrants or people of color, either they're not in the media or they only present one side, this model minority myth. But I think it's most interesting to look at the well-intentioned lie, the small lie that snowballs, and how people manage and care for that lie and believe that they're doing the best for themselves or their family when truly in the end it's self-serving.
And that's really what many of your stories are about, including the very first one called Line Please, which is the one that we were talking about in the introduction. A movie star in Hong Kong who flees home to Oakland after a sex scandal. This is a story that's based on a real life incident.
Exactly. And it's a whole trend that I covered while reporting on the Asian American community, that people from Canada and from the United States would go back to Asia to find stardom. I think I first may have heard of the story. One of my husband's fraternity brothers at Cal ended up being a huge star in Singapore. There was someone, from the East Bay, Daniel Wu, who became a huge star in Hong Kong as well, although he's now come back to the Bay Area and is on an AMC show, Badlands. And so in this case, I was inspired by Edison Chen, who's originally from Canada, and he went to get his laptop repaired. He thought he'd erased everything, but the technicians found him basically in bed or standing or whatever position with every starlet in Hong Kong. So he fled to the U.S. to hide out. And I just thought that was such an interesting conundrum, that you could be Brad Pitt famous in one place, but totally anonymous in another. And also just that whole tension of your parents left China to find a better life for you and for their family in this country, but then you instead find that you must go back to Asia to find your stardom.
Well, part of that, too, is the fact that a lot of Asian American actors or Asian Canadian actors in this particular case find it hard to get roles in the U.S. in Hollywood.
Yes, beyond the usual stereotypical roles.
But the other part of this is that you also are playing, as you said, with this model minority myth, because it's essentially this person who is involved in a sex scandal and quite promiscuous. It leads me to wonder what you think the state of the model minority myth is. I feel like there have been so many efforts to dispel it. Do you think it still remains stubbornly persistent? Is it a pile of rubble now, or is it, barely starting to crumble? I'm just curious where you see the strength of it.
Well, I think people on one hand may take pride in it still, even within the Asian American community. Oh, we're not, our community knows how to do it. But then that masks issues within the community itself. There is no one story of a community. So even within different ethnicities or within different families, people struggle to uphold that. And the model minority is a stereotype. Like as with every stereotype, there's problems because it can mask the true complexity of who someone is or what issues their community faces.
So it's really not being deconstructed as much as I think some would hope in terms of the problematic issues with the myth.
Yes. I mean, people, you know, look at the continuing popularity of the book Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mom. People are looking towards that for an example. You're trying to make sense of the world and you fall back on the thing that is the easiest way of explaining the world.
Well, you are going to read something for us from your short story collection, Deceit and Other Possibilities. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you prepared to read?
Sure. It's an excerpt from the story, The Older the Ginger, and it is inspired by my reporting both in San Francisco's Chinatown and in the Pearl River Delta, which is east of Hong Kong. And after I read the excerpt, I can explain how. The Older the Ginger. Sometime after lunch, old Wu realized he'd been kidnapped. On the way from the airport, his cousin had taken a detour. If he'd driven in circles or gone the wrong direction, old Wu wouldn't have known the difference. More than a half century ago, he left the Pearl River Delta, left the hills green with pine and bamboo for San Francisco, and hadn't returned since. His cousin parked at a restaurant where they were the only customers at the only table, and the only staff, his cousin's daughter, Little Treasure. She hovered, simpering and smiling like a courtesan. It was startling to find himself in high demand after his years among the bachelors of Chinatown. Finding a wife had been a competitive endeavor, and old Wu hadn't much to differentiate himself, just another waiter turned cook. Then his mother had written, insisting old Wu marry. She was 93. He was 76. Come back, she told him. Come back and find a wife.
Vanessa Hua reading from her short story collection called Deceit and Other Possibilities. So you wanted to say more about this particular story.
Yes. So it was inspired by two sides of the same trend that I saw manifest itself across the Pacific. So I had an opportunity to go back to China, to the Pearl River Delta, which is where many of the earliest immigration to the U.S. came from. Because it was chaotic, because it was a place of bandits, floods, and famines. It was also on the coast. So, you know, if you were going to leave China, that was a province you left from. But that continues to today, where I went to villages that were completely hollowed out, all the, you know, just grandparents and young children. And the rest, anyone of working age, starting from when you were a teenager, went to the cities. There was a resourcefulness, a wiliness, but also a desperation. You would do whatever it took to leave your village and make a better life for yourself. So after I got back from that trip, I was going into Chinatown to interview an elderly gentleman about his housing situation. Lived in a studio. Knock on the door. Woman answers, young, beautiful, hair to her waist. And I thought, is this his nurse or his daughter? And it turned out it was his wife. Because, and much like as with my story, he had been summoned back to the old country when he was well into his old age and told to find a local bride. So
we're talking with author and San Francisco columnist Vanessa Hua about her new collection of short stories. And I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation. She's just with us for a half hour. So you can ask your questions by calling 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org, post them on Facebook, on Twitter, or on our website, kqed.org/forum. In reading your stories, which really are beautifully written in terms of the description, and they're very fast paced, and you find yourself engaging immediately with the characters, I also wondered how you approach stereotypes and ethnic caricatures, because you are certainly incorporating truths about what's happening, but which can easily be then construed to be applicable right to an entire category of people. And it's something that I think a lot of writers have to wrestle with, especially if there are so many stereotypes about them that just seem to be so persistent. Do you feel like you are wrestling with them when you write, or do you feel like you figured out a way to deal with those things?
I think in my writing, good writing naturally combats stereotypes because you are seeking out the individual characteristics. You are trying to understand the complexities of their heart and of their dreams. And so while at face value, you might think, oh, this is the product of a tiger mom, then you begin to understand if, you know, in my attempt to write a nuanced story, that they have their reasons and circumstances that make them very distinct, that they don't stand in for an entire community. They only stand in for themselves.
Tell me about the column you write for the San Francisco Chronicle.
So it's a dream come true. I grew up in the Bay Area and grew up reading all the columnists. And it was around sometime last year or a little more than a year ago, John Carroll retired and he was writing 4 days a week. And obviously no one could ever replace him. He's amazing. But the paper, I decided to put a call out to, you know, to see what kind of voices they could get. And so now I am one of four weekly columnists that write on a different day of the week.
And what types of issues do you try to address with your column? What do you focus on?
Yeah, it's a range of issues. Often I write about immigration identity, also about motherhood and raising my twin five-year-old boys, also taking an opportunity to do mini profiles of I wrote about an Iraqi asylee family, just – I want to write the stories about interesting things happening in our community to help bring together readers in conversation and in discussion.
And you are really born and bred in the Bay Area. You grew up in Orinda, right?
Yes, yes.
Well, speaking of immigration, May tweets, given the recent and abrupt changes to U.S. immigration policy, any scenarios that strike you as ripe for storifying, since you do like to launch from real world events, Vanessa Hua?
Yes. Well, I've been thinking about this, how what's been happening seems beyond fiction, that if you wrote a spy thriller involving Russian involvement in the White House, an editor in New York would look at it and say, like, this is totally unbelievable, and wouldn't buy the manuscript. So we're the truth right now almost defies fiction. That said, I know there's been some interesting – there was that interesting story told from Melania's point of view in the New York Times. It was a short story. For me, I think I still need to percolate on what's happening. Many of the stories in my collection came years after their initial inspiration. I think I'm still trying to make sense of what's happening.
Including the one about the Korean-American woman who faked her acceptance to Stanford. Can you remind us of that story and
sure.
tell us why you were so drawn?
Yeah, in 2007, so I went to Stanford, so I was already interested when I heard that there was a Korean-American woman who had told everyone that she'd gotten into Stanford and went off to college, told her parents she had a ROTC scholarship, and that's how, you know, she accounted for her parents not having to pay tuition. She went to class. She was in study groups. She was there for most of the year before she got discovered.
Even worked her way into the dorms.
Yes.
This is a true story.
This
yes.
is a true story. So I was completely fascinated by that. But at the same time, I began to hear of other examples that I took note of. There was a case at UC Riverside where someone called in a bomb threat to halt graduation ceremonies because he'd failed out. There was a case at UC Irvine where he had not been enrolled in med school but rented the robe for graduation, went so far as to march in the procession before a classmate called him out. So the point is not that all Asian Americans fake their way into higher education, obviously, but I really wanted to examine, to get deep inside the head of at least my character about why and how she went down this path.
And when did you realize that deceit was such a common thread throughout your stories that you wanted to title your book Deceit and Other Possibilities, which is also a very interesting thing to say.
Yes, and I can talk about the title. It wasn't actually until – so I wrote these stories over a period of a decade, and it wasn't until I had that stack of pages that I realized that this was a common theme, because I was writing it story by story. I didn't set out to write it around this theme. But I began to see how deceit and secrets and lies manifested in all these very different characters' lives, whether they were a boy from Mexico or a Chinese-American man who's coming out to his family or a Korean-American preacher on a mission trip in Africa. And so so I decided when I was trying to figure out the title, I thought maybe it could be The Responsibility of Deceit, which was the very first story that was ever published of mine. But it's kind of a mouthful, and I was sort of testing it out, or, you know, that or deceit and other stories. But when I was talking to my mother-in-law, kind of giving her, like, which one do you like better? She said, oh, I like deceit and other possibilities. And I said, that's not what I said, but that's the one I like. Because for me, I think possibility, you know, deceit has a negative connotation. Possibility has a positive one. But I think for these characters, I think deceit in some ways in their mind and in their hearts is they view it as a possibility. They view it as a stepping stone to bigger things, even if in the end the deceit entraps them.
And again, we're talking with Vanessa Waugh, columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle. I should tell you her appearances. She speaks tomorrow at WOW, Voices Now at Skyline College in San Bruno at 9:30, and at the USF Emerging Writer Festival on March 29th at 7:30. In Berkeley, she's at the Exceptional Women in Publishing Leadership Conference on March 30th and at the San Francisco Public Library Laureates Gala in April. And let's hear from Lori. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I'm interested in, I understand that Vanessa is also a novelist, so I'd really be interested in her thoughts about the difference between writing a novel and writing a collection of short stories.
Lori, thanks.
Thank you. I've always thought that short stories are very much, are closer in to a poem than being really just an excerpt or a novel is not a long short story. Short stories very much turn on a moment or an emotion or a realization. And I love short stories for that reason of being able to focus in on that. And also to be able to jump in and out of all these heads and lives and circumstances. A novel is much more a marathon. You're on this journey with the character. And my first novel is coming out next spring, A River of Stars.
What can you tell us about it?
It's set at those, have you heard of those maternity tourism centers?
Yes, I have.
Yes, but to explain.
They even came up during the presidential campaign.
Yes, exactly. Anchor babies and such. Mm. But wealthy Chinese will come to the U.S. to give birth so that their kids can gain U.S. citizenship. And then they go back home. But it's, you know, they're not here to take services, but it's almost like an insurance policy. Like, it's got that in your back pocket. So my main character is a factory clerk who is her married lover. Her boss sends her here and he betrays her. But then she takes off with a teenage stowaway from the center. And they make their way to San Francisco's Chinatown, actually. So it's sort of like a pregnant Thelma and Louise.
Well, you certainly like to go for those pieces that would make those who want to keep the model minority myth strong quaking. Kevin writes, sort of almost along this lines, he says, I haven't read the collection, but Hua's tone reminds me of Lois Ann Yamanaka, a Hawaiian author who's famous for her frank and hilarious portrayals of local island life. Are you familiar with this author?
I'm not, but I'm writing her name down. That's I always love hearing about new authors I should be checking out.
Thanks, Kevin. And then Bridget asks, has Hua been surprised by the fabulous reception of her collection? Literary agents say no one reads short stories.
You always, you write in isolation and you never know what will happen once it makes its, a book makes its way out into the world. But I've been very gratified. It's always interesting when you, especially if you find that you've reached someone you hadn't thought could possibly have ever found your book, that someone who wasn't my friend or a family member would have read it. But I got this lovely letter from a reader who he had asked if he could mail me his book so I could sign it. And he included this beautiful letter just talking about really analyzing my work, what he liked about it. But what was most touching at the end, he ended it by saying, I'm engaged to someone who's from South Korea, and my brother's engaged to someone from Italy, and immigration is now going to be part of our family. So thank you for writing these stories. And I was extremely moved by that.
If there is one story that you would say you were in it the most, meaning it was most reflective of your own life, what would you say It was in your collection. Is there one that, is about you?
They're all about me, and they're all not about me. I'm not trying to be coy, but I do think that even though from the outset you might think, well, this is about a gay man, or this is about a preacher, or this is about a pop star, they all reflect things that I was thinking about, conversations I was having. They all present to me choices where I consider, if I was put in this circumstance, what would I do? If I were really pushing myself to the extreme, what would I do? So in that sense, they are all of me.
And you've written and traveled to so many places, China, Burma, Panama, South Korea. How did those figure into the way that you approached your short stories, if they did at all?
Oh, definitely. I think being a journalist trained me to write daily, to have a license to ask questions, to go out in the world, to be open to being edited. And so I bring all that to my fiction writing. So especially when I'm writing about people who are outside of my own direct experience, I start from a place of humbleness and not arrogance and not assumption. And I think it's about really trying to understand someone deeply, even if in the end you're not going to agree with their choices.
And it also seems like you're fascinated by how people straddle cultures from two places.
Yes.
Really how they straddle worlds.
Definitely, definitely. I think just the world is a lot more – there's talk of closing borders, but I think that's just not going to happen. We live in a globalized world. The internet connects us, culture connects us, and it's people who do have a view of more than one culture or this broader global view that I think you know, that's what the future is.
You've talked about the benefits of being a journalist to your writing as a novelist as well, but or a short story writer. Do you, though, feel yourself moving towards one or the other that feels more truer to who you are?
Well, I do think it's good for me to have both in my life because with my weekly column, I get something in the paper and I get a response every single week. With a novel, you're just toiling away for years, hoping beyond hope that it will get picked up and that later people will read it. So it for me, it's having both in my life has been important. And I think they both nourish each other. I mean, writing fiction has helped my journalism. Not that I'm making things up, but that I have a much stronger sense of setting and character and an arc that I want to put in my columns.
And in some sense, too, it just lets you really explore on the reverse side. When you're hearing about these real life stories, you get to kind of let your imagination run with these real life characters
right, in
the Bay Area.
Right, right,
well,
definitely.
Vanessa Hua, thanks again and congratulations on your book. Really appreciate you coming in today to talk with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Vanessa Hua, columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle. Her book of short stories called Deceit and Other Possibilities received an Asian Pacific American Award in Literature, and her first novel comes out next year. Up next, we talk about the life and legacy of rapper Tupac Shakur, who will be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Stay with us for that. I'm Mina Kim.